from pop culture to politics, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a great nation where I wouldn't say that the greatest election of the season is the New York mayoral election, even though there are about 232 Democratic candidates. Actually, they're voting on June 22nd, but there's also a Republican race going on. And at one point, after the primary on June 22nd, or whenever they finish with the mess the Democrats have, they're going to have a Republican nominee. And in my opinion, the front runner right now is an old friend. His name is Curtis Sliwa. He is a regular on talk radio for many, many years. He's perhaps best known as the founder of the Guardian Angels, as an advocate for law and order. And he has been endorsed by Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor who made such a big difference in bringing down the crime rate in New York City. Curtis, before we get to some of the issues, which I do want to get to, a lot of people are saying, what are you wasting your time for? Everybody says there's no chance at all. It doesn't matter which of the extremely liberal Democrats gets nominated for mayor of New York. It's going to be a Democratic mayor. A Republican like you has no chance. To which you say?
Well, they're tossing in the white towel. They're saying no mas, no mas. And they're capitulating to the Democrats, feeling that if they support an establishment Democrat, they will fend off AOC, All Out Crazy, and her Democratic Socialists of America. But how foolish they are. They look at the history of New York. Did anybody really know who George Pataki was? A mayor, former assemblyman, state senator from up in Peekskill, New York. You couldn't have picked him out of a police lineup. And yet, he beat the iconic figure in the Democratic Party, Mario Cuomo, who was already, they were fashioning the fifth actual face to be put up on Mount Rushmore. It was going to be Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, and Mario Cuomo. And he came out of nowhere to beat Mario Cuomo convincingly and preventing him from having a fourth term. Now, back then, we had Mario Cuomo as governor. We had David Dinkins as mayor. And people remember, we were averaging 2,200 murders a year, and we were the murder capital of America. Now, you switch to New York City. For 8 years, we had Rudy, 12 years Bloomberg, Republican leadership for 20 years, George Pataki for 12 years as governor, Republican leadership. There was tranquility. There was progress made economically and in terms of improving standards in the schools. And most importantly, there was law and order. Now we've had 8 years of de Blasio and Governor Andrew Cuomo with Democratic leadership, and it's led to chaos and anarchy, and we're slipping back to the 1970s again. So, yeah, I'm synonymous with law and order. I'm synonymous with public safety for 42 years in New York City through the Guardian Angels, providing for safe subways, safe streets, and safe parks. And I think that is resonating with a lot of people, not just Republicans, but the many independents, because a lot of young people, they now register as independents if they intend to vote, and moderate Democrats who fear AOC.
Well, first of all, you mentioned who'd ever heard of George Pataki. I had, because I went to school with him. And he's been a friend of mine literally for, gosh, I hate to say it, almost 50 years. And George is a great guy. Has he endorsed you yet? Is Governor Pataki likely to do that?
Yes, Governor Pataki has endorsed me. All the elected Terrific. Republicans, Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis, obviously Rudy Giuliani. So all the Republicans in elected office, there aren't that many of them any longer in New York City and New York State, have endorsed me. And nobody has endorsed my opponent. So since law and order, public safety, quality of life is the main issue that's resonating in all the polls, and not just for Republicans, but independents and Democrats. It is the prime issue, and it is the issue that obviously New Yorkers have grown up with me, and over three generations, they know that I can deliver in that area, as opposed to all the Democrats. They're either into defunding the police, removing what they call qualified immunity from police, which means they're going to have to go out and get police malpractice insurance, like a doctor or a lawyer would, which is outrageous. And they're all into either proposing taking guns away from the police, neutering them more, as our city slides into the violent crime abyss. I mean, we're right behind Chicago in terms of everyday shootings that occur between competing gangs and thugs who know there are no consequences because we have a no-bail law instituted by Governor Cuomo in Albany. And as a result, we have predicate offenders who are continuing to commit violent crimes. They're not remanded to jail. There's no bail. They're just sent back out into the streets to do it again and again and again. And as mayor of the city of New York, I'm going to put the skids to all of that, lobby against that no bail law. It should be similar to what has transpired in New Jersey, where the final decision is the judge and the judges alone, whereas in New York, the judges are handcuffed and cannot make a decision about whether someone's a flight risk, a danger to themselves, or a danger to society.
You know, it's interesting because I was out at a wedding of very dear friends of ours, and it was in Staten Island. It was Sunday night. And a lot of the folks at the wedding were actually talking about your campaign. Now, it's Staten Island, the most conservative enclave in the city of New York. But I think that people who are writing off your campaign right now, you just need to clear the Republican primary. You have one opponent. Of the Democrats who are running, who would you most like to run against? Who would be your favorite opponent to go up against in the general election?
Well, you have three candidates who are to the extreme left. They've worshipped at the altar of AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. They've begged for her endorsement, and she has endorsed one woman named Maya Wiley. But because, as you mentioned, there's ranked choice voting, she has suggested, oh, if you don't like that radical, well, put Scott Stringer, the city controller, as your number two choice. A woman named Morales, who is might as well be the sister of Che Guevara, as your third choice. So I would welcome any of the three because they are so extreme. They want to take $3 billion out of a police budget that's only $6 billion to begin with. And they don't want the police to be proactive at all. They want them to be reactive. So if given my druthers, because of ranked choice voting, any of those three would allow me then to talk about refunding the police, hiring more police, and allowing them to be proactive, and a return of their qualified immunity, which is how the taxpayers guaranteed that a police officer, while reacting on our behalf, risking their lives, is not going to be sued to the point where they have to declare Chapter 11.
Well, this is such important stuff, Curtis. We're going to put up information about your campaign on our website at michaelmedved.com because if people want to talk about conservatives gathering momentum again, a Republican Party comeback, it could begin in New York City. It would be such a shock. It would be an amazing and beautiful thing. You have a primary night victory speech ready to go, Curtis?
No, I never write anything down, Michael. It's always right from the heart, my feelings at that moment. Although in this regard, as you talk about the rebirth, the resurrection of a Republican role model in New York City to lead the rest of urban America that's also being swallowed into the belly of the beast by high crime, it is the fact that I have personally gone into neighborhoods that Republicans never go into for the past 42 years, where the only Republican they knew was Abraham Lincoln on a $5 bill. So I'm known in the projects. I'm known in the tenements. I'm known in the neighborhoods where there are a lot of people of color, most of whom are all registered Democrats or independents.
And my guess is, Curtis Lee, is that
party because they buy all the nonsense and the propaganda.
You're going to be known not just by people in those projects and in different corners of New York, but if this campaign heats up, you're going to be known around the world. That's Curtis Sliwa. That's S-L-I-W-A. You can find out information about his campaign. Coming up on the Medved Show, we'll be talking about what terror act did the Iranian thugs get away with? Never held to account. Coming up on the Medved Show.
From politics to pop culture and from coast to coast, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, I get to have a little bit more time with Curtis Sliwa because Curtis is a talk radio professional. He and I used to be on the same station in New York City. And he's a pro and a patriot and somebody who is promising, or you might even say threatening, to bring the Republican Party, which has been moribund in New York City for a while, back to life, and maybe to some of those glory days he was talking about when George Pataki was the mayor, the governor of New York, and Rudy Giuliani was the mayor. I wanted to ask you about this, Curtis. There's no foreign policy officially in the mayor's office in New York, but everybody knows mayors have foreign policy. And some of the comments that Bill de Blasio has made about Israel, particularly in hours of need, with the largest Jewish community in the world, it might be second to Tel Aviv now, but it's still the biggest Jewish community in the country. There are a lot of voters out there who care a lot about Israel. And you have been known for, I think, most of your life as somebody with a very strong, visceral support for Israel. Would that be saying it right?
No, absolutely. I've made 3 trips to Israel, and I've traveled from a lot up to the Golan Heights and thought that I was in New Jersey. It is such a small country. You can't, until you've experienced it, you can't believe how really small it is and how every square inch, there's a piece of history there. And you immediately understand the significance of the state of Israel. But also, Michael, where the mayor could have been of help, never mind his just ignoring the plight of the state of Israel, surrounded by so many of its enemies, particularly the Iranians and Hezbollah and their agents. But if you look in New York City, there have been a series of anti-Semitic attacks going back to the time of Crown Heights in 1991 when David Dinkins was mayor, the mentor to Bill de Blasio. He chose to do nothing for 3 days, and the Guardian Angels, the group that I run, was brought in for 30 days and 30 nights to protect the Lubavitchers who were under siege. And then if you remember 2 Hanukkahs ago, again, the ultra-Orthodox were under attack. And the mayor had a meeting in which he told ultra-Orthodox leaders, you see your problem, a white supremacist. And they all looked at one another and they said, oh, this mayor has lost it. He's Meshuggah. And that's when my phone blew up right before Shabbat, where a lot of the leaders in Borough Park, in Williamsburg, in Crown Heights were saying to me, Curtis, you got to bring the Guardian Angels in again. This mayor is misguided. And there continue to be anti-Semitic attacks till today. And the mayor has never, never forcefully put them down, never forcefully addressed them. And so if you happen to be Jewish, and it's specifically ultra-Orthodox, you realize you have a target on your back as you walk the streets of New York City, or you ride the subways, or you take your family through a park.
Yeah, and look, this is one of those things where there's also an issue, and I will tell you, this just struck me. In a supermarket not too far from where I live, they had angry demonstrators out in front. You know what they were demonstrating against? Ben & Jerry's ice cream. And I don't like Ben & Jerry's because they're ultra-liberal. But they happen to be 2 Jewish guys. Ben Cohen is one of them who's been on our show. And this is the boycott, divest, and sanction people who want to get supermarkets to stop dealing with products. They were also demonstrating against Sabra hummus that they were selling at this supermarket. There are all kinds of efforts to try to get governments to step up against the boycott, divest, and sanctions movement. Are you part of that?
Oh, I've absolutely seen this take place. Isn't it ironic? Ben and Jerry's, who were so supportive of Bernie the Altacaca Sanders and his runs for the presidency out of their state of Vermont, has had the tables turned on them by Bernie Sanders, who is really one of the leaders of that movement. You know, we talk about AOC, we talk about the squad in the House that continually pushed that, but it really emanated from Bernie Sanders.
That's
and
absolutely
I've done everything
true.
I can to counteract that. In fact, if anything, if you've been to Israel of late, as opposed to when I first went, and it was like socialism in so many ways. You could never get anything done. The paperwork was just overwhelming. Businesses were stifled. Capitalism barely existed. Modern-day Israel is leading in the forefront of not only capitalistic enterprises, but in technology and medicine and so many arenas, because capitalism has been allowed to flourish, and they're competing on an international basis, which is to the benefit of the world population, not just the population of Israel or their best ally, the United States, but the entire world, the global community.
Well, there's no question about it, and particularly the Arab world. One of the things that my brother, as you may know, my brother's lived in Israel for 35 years, and he does business over there. And right now, the flights are full all the time between Dubai and Tel Aviv. And the recent war with Hamas, it wasn't a war with the Palestinians, it was a war with a terror group called Hamas. That hasn't stood in the way of that. Curtis, right now there's violence and property destruction and all kinds of narishkeit nonsense going on in Washington Square, down near Greenwich Village. What would Mayor Sliwa do about that situation?
I'll coordinate off, impose a curfew, maintain the curfew. Look, it was many years ago, again, back when the teacher of Bill de Blasio, David Dinkins, had a similar problem with Tompkins Square Park, which was in the Lower East Side. In fact, I was living right across the street at the time at Avenue A in St. Mark's Place, in which he was forced to impose a curfew. He built a fence around the park, a huge fence. You couldn't get into the park. And there is a movement in New York City, parks with no fences, parks with no curfews. So whatever eventually happens with Washington Square Park will end up infecting all the parks, the beautiful parks of all of New York City, if in fact they don't let cameras to be put in the parks, which is what the radical left is demanding, that there be no cameras in the parks, that there be no fences, and that there be no curfews. There'll be pandemonium, anarchy. It'll be a place where people, once the sun goes down, you won't want to be around that part of town.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those things that, as I mentioned to you, we recently have been in New York City with our daughter. And the park system is one of those things that people forget about, which is a gift to everybody. People also forget about, once upon a time, public schools were a world role model in New York City. And I know that's another major goal for Curtis Sliwa, who is a Republican candidate for mayor. Yes, there are Republicans in New York City. And yes, it's important that everybody get out and vote. People can vote now. Early voting has already begun. The primary is June 22nd. And when Curtis clears the primary, and I think it's when, not if, he's going to make some noise. He's going to get some attention and raise some issues, and he could just shock the world. Check out the information on his campaign for Curtis Sliwa at michaelmedved.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mighty Michael Medved Show.
This is The Michael Medved Show.
There's two new polls that I want to cover, and one of them basically reveals profound differences. I mean, huge differences between Republicans and Democrats on what you fear most. It's done by the Echelon Group, and the polling asks the following question. They say, how concerned are you, if at all, that the following are a problem for the country? So what would come to your mind first as the biggest problem for the country? It's almost laughable how different these answers are. And it does suggest to me, the results of this poll, that Democrats are, profoundly out of touch. And speaking of out of touch, I know that when Americans are asked, it's very frequent that Americans will overestimate the number of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered people in the population. But in general, the reliable polling in the past has showed that about taking transgender, bisexual, gay, lesbian, undecided people who are something other than straight, maybe heterosexual, that it's generally been about 4% of the population. There's a new Gallup poll, and it's a big study, and I think it should be taken seriously. And the headline for the poll is LGBT identification rises to 5.6% in the latest U.S. estimate. Currently, they point out that according to this latest update on lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgendered identification, finds 5.6% of U.S. adults identifying as LGBT. The current estimate is up from 4.5% in Gallup's previous update on 2017. So it's a big increase. Does this reflect actual change in the way that people live their lives and identify? It's still very, very far, despite the fact that gay marriage is legal. It is still a tiny percentage, even in the most gay-friendly cities, of all marriages are same-sex marriages. It's less than 2% everywhere. But what this does is it actually reflects something that came out in the exit polls in the election. In the election, the percentage of people who identified themselves as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered was 7%. And now that's higher than this number. But they explain that in part by suggesting that gay and lesbian people were more motivated to vote. They may have come out in higher numbers because there are other studies that suggest that gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people are as a group somewhat more educated. Okay, so what do we learn from all of this? And what we really do need to learn, and this is why this Gallup poll is useful, is that the majority of this 5.6%, and it's a clear majority, don't identify as gay. They don't identify as lesbian. They don't identify as transgendered. They identify as bisexual. And here's what the Gallup poll says, and I think it's fascinating. It says more than half of LGBTQ adults, 55%, identify as bisexual. Only a quarter say they are gay. 12% say they are lesbian. And 11% say they are transgender. Now, when you say transgender, I don't believe that the number even... Now, that's not the population. It's a percentage of all of the LGBTQ population. But what is fascinating to me is there are two things about this bisexual identification. And part of previous studies that have been done by the Williams Institute at UCLA and elsewhere about the gay and lesbian population is that very often people who may have had one same-sex experience will identify themselves as bisexual. And again, there's no question here ruling out from the bisexual identification of people who may be living entirely as gay, or more likely, because that appears to be the majority of the bisexual people, living a straight life with a opposite sex partner. And it also is remarkable, it seems to me, that the number of males who describe themselves as gay is more than double the percentage of the number of females who describe themselves as lesbian. That's extraordinary. Now, why would that be? And what does this say about any connection to the age of the respondents? Listen to this. People who were 24 or younger. 12%, a full 12% say they're bisexual. But very, very few say they're gay, lesbian, or transgender. There's a lot of bisexuals among that group. Among baby boomers, the number isn't 12% who say they're bisexual. It's 0.3%. Okay, so it's like 35 times more common to be bisexual if you're born after the year 2000. Now, some people would say that's because the world has changed. And today, people talk a lot about sexual minorities, about gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered people. That's certainly true. But given the fact that one of the items of faith for the entire gay rights movement is this is not a choice. You are born this way. That's what they say. Does that compute? Is it possible that there would be that people who were born before 1964 would be 35 times less likely to be bisexual? No, what this is a reflection of, it seems to me, is it's people making up their mind. This goes back to a research that is old now, and it's I don't take it as authoritative because it is too old. But it's about 20 years old. It's from a professor at Yale Medical School who was a friend of mine named Jeffrey Satinover. And Dr. Satinover pointed out one thing about all the studies, which is that for most people who have ever had a same-sex experience in their lives, and that's only a minority of Americans or people anywhere, but for most people who have a same-sex experience of some kind, it's usually when you're young, below the age of 25, and the majority of people who have such experiences don't have it ever again after they're 25. Why not? Well, because most people do settle into long-term opposite-sex relationships called marriage. It still is more common for people to have long-term marriages than not. With everything you hear about the death of marriage, it's still a very big factor. And so what we are seeing here, where you have so few people who identify as bisexual, to some extent what bisexual means is that you haven't settled on a single partner. The basic point being that the idea that you're either you're gay or you're straight or you're transgendered, that these identities are much more fluid than people want to let on. I'll tell you what isn't very fluid is political identities. When one of the major parties identifies as America's number one threat, the members of the other party. Now, which side says that? We'll get to that and more. 1-800-955-1776 coming up on the MedVed Show. Fascinating poll by Echelon Insights. That's Kristen Soltis Anderson, who's been a guest on this show. She is a well-respected pollster from the center-right. I think she would describe herself as a conservative-leaning moderate. But the poll is fascinating, and they have such different results from Democrats and Republicans. When people talk about a looming civil war within the Republican Party, the big divisions still in this country are not among people in the same party or in the same general area. It's between the left and the right, where the differences are just bizarre. Okay, she asked this question, and we'll do Democrats first, because this is just so spectacularly out of the ballpark. Question, how concerned are you, if at all, that the following are a problem for this country. At the very bottom of the list, they did have 39% of Democrats. And on this thing, you can mark more than one. You can mark all of them if you want. But the bottom concern, only 39% of Democrats thought that capitalism was a problem for this country. But it's still 39% thought capitalism was a problem for this country.
Oh, groovy, smashing. Yay, capitalism.
I mean, that is kind of nuts, don't you think? By the way, 73% of Republicans think socialism is a problem for this country, and they're right. Of course it's a problem. It's a problem when you have more and more people who are saying, I'm a socialist, I'm proud to be a socialist. It was one of those things that Joe Biden understood that was a problem, certainly a problem for his party, because that was a word that you never heard. Despite the fact that it's a word that's embraced by the likes of Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and others, including some of the new Democratic members of Congress. In any event, the number one problem, and nothing else close, 82% of Democrats said they were very concerned, extremely concerned. 57% said they had the highest concern. 82% said they were at least somewhat concerned with Donald Trump's supporters. So if you're a Trump supporter out there, and there are millions and millions of you, he got 74 million votes, your neighbors who describe themselves as Democrats are worried more about you than about jihadist terrorism, than about criminals, than about mass shooters, than about corporate thieves, than about conspiracy theory nuts. They're worried about Trump supporters. That's the number one concern. Does that make sense to you? By the way, if you share this opinion that you think that the biggest problem in America is Donald Trump supporters, this is one of those things where I've said it over and over and over again. Can we recognize it's possible to disagree with people and still recognize that they're great people? That I know people who are Bernie Sanders supporters. They're terrific. Patriotic. Some of them former military, by the way. Now, I disagree as profoundly as I can on a range of issues with Senator Sanders, but he has some really wonderful supporters. Of course, I know literally, I know hundreds, if not thousands, of Trump supporters. And the overwhelming majority of Trump supporters are not crazy. They're not like the people who stormed the Capitol building. They are decent, patriotic, hardworking, charitable, kind, compassionate, patriotic Americans. Okay, the second highest concern for Democrats. Number one concern, Donald Trump's supporters. Number two concern, white nationalism. Number three concern, systemic racism. Number four concern, gun violence. Now, it's interesting they stipulate gun violence. If they just said crime, wouldn't that be a more appropriate answer? There's just a horrible story in New York City about a guy named Rodrigo Lopez, who came here as a teenager from the Dominican Republic. And he's somebody who's mentally ill and homeless. And he just stabbed four people on the subway for nothing, out of nowhere, just stabbed them. Two of them killed. That's not gun violence. I'm concerned about that. By the way, you'll notice that the Democrats don't list how concerned are you anything at all, the following are a problem for the country. They don't list homelessness. They don't list the fact that people are camping out in public parks all over the country. Okay, Donald Trump supporters, white nationalism, systemic racism, gun violence. Then you get to a more typical Democratic thing, Americans lacking health coverage. Then domestic terrorism, police brutality, discrimination against LGBTQ Americans. Really? That is one of the biggest problems we have as a country? I mean, given the fact that it is so much more accessible, it's so much more acceptable, so much more fashionable today. Then after that, sexism, then voter suppression, then student debt. This is unreal. 22% of Democrats say they're extremely concerned about student debt. If you add the people who say they're somewhat concerned, that ends up being 46%. And then at the bottom, capitalism. So what are conservatives, what are Republicans say they are concerned about? Number one problem, and not a surprise considering some of the political talk that went on during the Trump administration, illegal immigration. And that's after 4 years of President Trump. Number two, lack of support for the police. This is Republicans. Number three, high taxes. They got that right. Number four, liberal bias in mainstream media, then general moral decline of the country, then socialism, then Antifa violence, then China. It stuns me that people are more concerned. They think Antifa violence is a bigger problem for the country than China. The Democrats never even mentioned China. Legal abortion in the third trimester, election fraud. There are 64% of Republicans who say that we have a problem of election fraud in this country. Tech company censorship, and then discrimination against Christians. Isn't it unbelievable that nobody mentioned this homeless thing? That the Republicans didn't mention rising crime rates? Well, they did mention lack of support for the police. That was right up there near the top. But one of the questions I would ask would be, okay, it's not healthy in the country when you have one political party. It happens to be the party that controls the House and the Senate and the White House right now, where they think the biggest problem in the country is Trump's supporters. I want to go to Sid in Atlanta. Hello, Sid. You're on the Medved Show.
I want to also say that I'm a Democrat, as you know, and Trump supporters were also my number one concern within his whole administration the last 4 years. And Michael, you're into movies, and there's one particular movie that always came to mind whenever I think of Trump in office, and that's Bushwick. And Bushwick, they were shooting all over. And if you understand the nature of that movie, the South was trying to leave the Union, basically. And another thing is that Trump's the Republican leaders are scared of Trump, and it's because of his supporters.
But they're not. What they're scared about is people might vote against them. They're not. You accept, Sid, don't you, that the people that you saw in those videos raiding the Capitol building, that was not typical of the 74 million people who voted for Donald Trump. Most of the people who did the real violence in the Capitol building were members of extremist right-wing pro-Trump organizations, but they weren't representative of the ordinary Trump voter, were they?
Talking about the everyday Trump voters who didn't like what happened at the Capitol, those are Trump constituents who happens to be the Republican leaders' constituents at the same time. So that's why we almost overlooked checks and balances, and democracy was going down because they're all scared of Trump.
Okay, this is part of the left-wing narrative, Sid, and honestly, you and I disagree on this. I don't think democracy was going down. I think we had a horrible day. We had people who threatened it. But there was no way that it was going to change the fact that we had a free, fair, legitimate election. An election that is worthy, frankly, of this greatest nation on God's green earth.